Be with us, Father. Watch over us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Sorry, folks, I forgot to do the Lord's Prayer, but I was afraid of messing it up. You laugh. You get up here and do it. You know. Don't be done. Well, I got a couple of pieces of advice. We need to lay it on us. And Gerald said, give us heck. I don't know how to do that, but we might try to do that. I want you to look at the time. You give John 15 minutes and you gave me 35. That's not a good idea at all. It's a really bad idea. I'm going to do something a little bit different, and it's going to be deeply personal to me. I did something somewhat similar for a group at the college recently, and I've kind of repurposed my story for here. What I'm going to do is a little bit of revisionist history. Now, for those of you who usually hear that term, I'm a historian by training. I teach history up at the college, and most of us, when you hear the term revisionist history, you think, oh, well, somebody's making it up as they go along. I hate to tell you guys, all historians are revisionist historians. We all are. Otherwise, if it was just thus, those are the facts, nothing but the facts, end of discussion, no one can reinterpret something, it doesn't work. In fact, I would argue that this sermon is about 40 years in the making. This is a sermon that got started by my grandmother, my dad's mother, at least 40 years ago with me, and I didn't know it, which is very important to telling this story. I'm going to start in a spot and tell you a series of stories that happened to me and my family, to me mostly, and how over the years I've come to realize that that circumstance didn't mean what I thought it did. That what I thought we were going through at that time is something a little different. I'm going to start at a very difficult point, and especially my father's life. It was shortly after my grandmother had passed away. And my dad, who is the toughest of the siblings, I guess, basically was drafted to take care of Mama's house after she passed away. So none of the other siblings could do it, the most of them said, or none of them trusted my dad's younger brother to do it. So Dad decided that I needed to go do this. And I was, maybe 10, 11 years old. I was absolutely of no use to him because there was some furniture to be moved. We needed to put stuff in a pickup truck to get to the families who were getting some of the stuff that Mama had, and the Salvation Army was getting everything else. And I was useless. I mean, in the eighth grade, guys, I was in junior high school. I was seventh, eighth, and ninth in junior high school. I was in the eighth grade, and I was the third smallest person in school. Okay. I grew 6 inches between the 8th and the 9th grade, and I grew 6 inches between the 11th grade and the 12th grade. That's where the height came from. I was a little scrawny thing. I was Save the Children poster, you know. I'm not quite there anymore, but, you know, you could see the ribs and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why my dad decided I needed to help, because I certainly wasn't helping carrying the mattresses out. I think Dad basically needed somebody to go with him. So we started in the living room. And the living room didn't have as much stuff. My grandmother had very little things. She lived in a four-room house. The kitchen was the biggest room in the house, and you'll understand why in a little bit. But, you know, we were taking things. We were taking table legs off and putting it, carried it down the steps, and it was a lot of steps. I grew up in a place where one leg is shorter than the other because you get used to living on the side of a hill. Everybody lives on the side of a hill where I grew up. Everybody lives on the side of a hill because that's all there is. Unless you had a houseboat or something you could put on the river, but that's about it. So we'd carried it down, and we'd gone through the living room, and we'd pretty much gotten the stuff that we needed to take to other people put away, and then we started a pile in the corner for the Salvation Army. And then we moved on to the kitchen. Now, my grandmother was an interesting person, we'll say that to say the least. She was just about as tall as I am. As my father would say, good peasant stock. You know, she could take care of whatever she needed to take care of. Okay? She was that kind. It was really funny if you saw her with my grandfather. My grandfather was 5'4". and like a fire hydrant. He's a fireplace. He's big. He's about 5'4" wide as well. He's a big bruiser of a man. He didn't want to mess with him. I didn't know him very, very well. I only have one memory of him, and that is when I was about four. It was probably just before he died. I remember sitting in his lap watching a movie, and I think it was about General Custer. That's all I remember, black and white TV. But just being enveloped in this very large man is about all I remember. He died, in fact, before my brother was born. I was three, maybe. But we were going through the kitchen, and we went into the cupboard where she had all of her food and various utensils and, you know, pots, pans, everything that she had. And Dad started laughing. Hysterically, he said, "John, you got to come in here and see this." I said, "Okay." So I went back in there, and there was a stack of these plastic butter tubs. You know what those things are, where you get margarine and stuff like that? The big ones, not the little ones, the big ones. Yeah. There must have been 100 of these with lids and all that kind of stuff. And he said, "The woman could not throw away anything," which is why we're going to be here for about 4 days. This is just like her. She's a bit of a hoarder, I guess, is what he was thinking more than anything. So we're messing around in there, and he said, "Look at all this coffee." And she had those big red cans of Folgers. There were 8 cans of that in the cupboard. Dad said, how many cups, how long do you think this would last?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "This is probably like 4 years of coffee here, you know, just in case we lose it." So okay. So he put me to work, started packaging this stuff up, and I was putting this stuff in. He said, "Come here and help me with a table." She had one of those dining room tables that was, you know, pressed board top and the metal legs. "We need to take the metal legs off." And he said, "Here's a screwdriver. I want you to take the metal legs off." So we turned the table on its side. And I was excited because I was getting to use a screwdriver. This is good stuff, you know. And there was an envelope taped to the bottom of the table. Now, many of you know what's going on here. Dad said a few words that he would never admit that he said at that moment. I learned, however, those words I got to use on the wiffle ball field later, which is not to my advantage, but you know what's going on. And I impressed my friends when I could use them. But it had a whole bunch of money in it. It had several hundred dollars in it. And Dad was like, "Okay, John, we got to take apart everything from now on. Okay, just look and see what it is." By the way, one of those cans of coffee had money in it. It didn't have coffee in it. The other ones weren't even open, but one of those cans of coffee had money in it. She had money in the tank of the toilet. She put a coffee can in there with a brick in it to raise the water level so she wouldn't use as much water. And there was money in there. There was money in the places you would expect, between the mattress and the box springs. So we were taking everything apart, and we finally got back to the extra bedroom. It was my job to go through the closet. This, I don't know why my dad did this to me, why he thought I would be any help whatsoever. So I pulled down a box that was about this size, you know. And all it had in it was string about this long. 2 inches, 2.5 inches, maybe 3 inches. Pieces of yarn, all kinds of it. And the box was full of it. And I kept going through it. And I said, "Well, it's got to have something else in it." You know, and I couldn't find anything. I said, "Dad, come here and tell me what's going on here." And he looked at it. And my dad, who is usually not like this, I've seen my dad cry 3 times. That was one of them. I saw him cry when my brother was hit by a car and just about killed on the way to the hospital. And I saw him do this when he came back from the Buffalo Creek flood. My dad worked for the telephone company for a number of years. When the Buffalo Creek flood happened, he was gone for about 2 weeks, and he sat at the table and sobbed. It's the only time I've seen him do that 3 times. And he started halfway laughing and halfway crying. Because this box was the symbol of my grandmother as far as he was concerned. Because what she had done is these were pieces of string too short to be saved. And she saved them. Now, we don't know if that was a joke she came up with. She had actually written on the outside of the box, string too short to be saved. We don't know if she was doing it deliberately. But for my dad, this was an example of, this is the woman that raised me. So we got to finish with that. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to back up and tell another story about my grandmother. I was at my grandmother's for the day by myself, which was very odd. Usually if I was there, I was there with my brother. He wasn't there. It was just me and Grandma. And we were, I was just playing on the porch. I had my trucks. And she always had this great, she had this great front porch, you know, screened in porch. You know, and she always sat in her wooden rocking chair. And she would, you know, peel beans or do a little bit of everything, read her Sunday school lesson, all that kind of stuff. And my first cousin shows up. And I liked my first cousin. He was about 8 years older than me. He would always play with me. So he comes in and he opens the screen door and he says, "Mama, I want you to know I just registered to vote." And she said, "That's marvelous." She looked, turned around, said, "That's marvelous. The world needs more Democrats." Okay. Now you know what's coming, right? So my first cousin said, "I registered Republican." I saw my grandmother angry one time in her life. I saw the flash. I was sitting right beside her. I was scared. I hadn't seen this before. She turned around, stood up, and said, "Sit down." My first cousin did what he was told. Now me, I'm pretty smart, okay? Little smart little guy. I'm thinking, I am out of here. Fight or flight, look at me. Flight is the way to go, you know? So I'm getting my trucks and I'm going inside and she says, "John, come here and sit down." "Yes, ma'am." So I come and I sit by my first cousin. We proceed to get a lecture for the next 30 minutes about why Republicans are evil. And here's the main reason. Because they don't care about people. That's what she said over and over and over again. Now, I don't care what your politics are. This is what my grandmother said. The lesson that I learned. Here's something also that's very important. Later that day, Jim had stayed with me. My cousin had stayed with me, and we played all day. Mama had been cooking in the kitchen. Now, my mama could only cook in a vat. She couldn't cook in a pot. It had to be a vat. The big wooden spoon that you could use in case of a flood as an oar, you know. That's the only way she could do this. And she had this big pot of soup beans, and she'd done cornbread, and she'd done this rice custard thing. I don't know, it's dessert. It's really sweet. It's great. It was marvelous. So what we did over the next hour, she said, "Okay, boys, we're going for delivery." I said, "Okay." So she loaded us up, and Jim and I carried soup, beans, cornbread to the neighbor, and the next neighbor, and the next neighbor, and the next neighbor, and then we went down a hill and dropped it off at Blanche Kirk's house, and we dropped it off here, and we dropped it off there, and we dropped it off here, and we dropped it off there. Now, I'd never been to her house really at this time of the day. We always were up there once a week, but it was always Sunday afternoon. We went to my one grandmother's and had dinner, and we went to the other grandmother's and we sat on the front porch and talked for hours, usually. Now, while we were going along the way, we kept getting these plastic pieces back, you know, these plastic tubs back. Because what was happening, I figured out much later, she was providing meals, and the people she was providing meals to were giving her the means to provide meals to everybody. I've got another plastic tin, or another plastic tub. I've got another so-and-so. She was also had a green thumb, and people would give her, we care, like 3 plants back. She's supposed to fix them. She looked at this one and said, "Boys, this can't be fixed. So we got to walk up on the hill and get another fern," which is what we did. I always wondered if she delivered it like 3 weeks later, say, "Look, I saved it." But I don't know. She might have. It's hard to tell. She had a sense of humor to go along with it. So I think that's where I got it. Now, why am I telling you this story? Because I'm going to fast forward to that first cousin of mine. He passed away a few years ago. He had leukemia. He was died a very young man. And we were at his funeral, and one of his neighbors was asked to give the eulogy. And he gave this eulogy, and he told this story about Jim, that Jim did every Saturday. Every Saturday, Jim washed everybody's car on the street. So I'm telling you that this took 40 years for me to figure out. Everybody's car on the street. Just because. Is it because Jim liked cars? Yeah. Or is it because he learned something from my grandmother about delivering stuff? Giving. Just because. Just because. Much later, I was going away to college, and my mother gave me a quilt to take with me, which is a quilt that Blanche Kirk had made for. She made one for me, and she made one for my little brother. Now, this was one of the women that my grandmother delivered food to. I don't know if she was delivering food because she was a phenomenal cook and everybody liked her food, or whether she really was taking care of a number of people. There were a couple of rough-looking people that came to the door that she gave food to. I didn't know who these people were. To this day, I don't know if she did it every day. I really don't know. In fact, when my dad and my mom were here recently, I asked Dad if she did that every day. I told him that story. He said, he has no idea. I bet you she did most days. Most days. I bet she did. Now, I'm not telling you a story to put her up for sainthood, because none of us should be up for sainthood, frankly. We don't deserve it. All of us need mercy. And we all know it. As sure as I'm standing here and as sure as you're sitting there, we all need God's grace. Well, my mom gave me this quilt, and this quilt everybody loved. It's completely falling apart now. But the backing started to come out, and I asked somebody to try to fix it for me once. And they said, I really can't do it without, sort of redoing it all. So, okay. What kept happening was they had these, I guess the batting, is that what the inside part is called? It was being held together by these little pieces of yarn. Now, I don't know for sure. The historian in me says I have to tell you the truth. I don't know for sure whether that box that my grandmother had of string too short to be saved, maybe it was just her little joke, or maybe it was something she thought was funny. But those little bits, little pieces of yarn that's holding the batting together and tied together a little bit, I suspect my grandmother gave those to Blanche Kirk. I don't know that for sure. But I have to give my grandmother credit for one really important thing. 40 years later, she taught me what was most important. Now, my grandmother was a very devout woman. I'm sure she's read this passage. I'm sure she's read this before. And I'm certain that she would be mortified that I used her as an example. I know that. I would get hit on the arm, trust me. That I used her as an example. But she taught me something very, very, very important. And something, quite frankly, I've not lived up to. To be honest with you, I didn't think about it much until my cousin's funeral. Until I started putting things together. Let's take another quick look at this passage. Luke 6, 36 through 38. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. That's I'm telling you, that I think is one of the scariest verses in the Bible. Because if we are to be as merciful as God has been to us, I don't even have to finish that sentence. Be merciful, just as God has been merciful. That's enough to condemn us right there. Do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. In my version, there's an interesting way that they've put this together in English, translated, of course, from Greek, but this is how they do it in English. They have a semicolon. A semicolon is between two independent clauses. These two go together. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. Forgive and give are together in the same sentence. I think the person who did the translation here did that deliberately, because there's not any semicolon in Greek. Those two things go together. You take care of people because you got to take care of people. We take care of people because we have to. We take care of people because we've been shown mercy, which is a critically important statement. Now, I've seen this passage used like a club against people. You know, given it will be given unto you. And a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. As if God was like some sort of one-armed bandit. You put the right kind of quarter in it and you get the jackpot. I'm sure you've seen this on television a number of times. Television ministers. Oh, yeah, if you give us money, God will bless you. I think the reason Jesus put this together the way he did, these are Jesus' words, is because this forgiveness and this no condemnation and this give and this mercy all go together. They work together. They work in tandem. And the same reason my grandmother would be mortified to hear me telling her story, is exactly the way we probably ought to be trying to give. See, the critical thing here, all of us have been shown mercy. This may sound trite, but all of us need string too short to be saved. And all of us probably ought to be considering, I need to make sure that I'm saving, metaphorically, string too short to be saved for everybody else. My grandmother gave an awful lot and had no wealth. And she didn't seem to mind much. She didn't seem to mind much. That is an interesting promise, though. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. I don't know how to interpret that, guys. I don't know. All I know is we all need mercy. And I can guarantee you, the world would be a much better place if we all gave mercy to each other. A much better place. I tried to take it the whole time. I thank you for listening and letting me tell you a personal story. I dare say as I leave here today, many of us could probably tell a somewhat similar story, which is important to pass on. Let's pray.